always, I'm joined by women's health nurse practitioner, Lindsay Van Schoik. And today on the show, we have Megan Henry, who was a professional athlete turned mindset coach now. So we're super pumped to have Megan on the show today.
Yeah, welcome.
Tell everyone, they're probably like, professional athlete, what did you do? So tell them a little bit about what you did.
So, yeah. I grew up playing sports. I played field hockey and ran track in college. I went to American University. And after that, I joined the Army after I graduated. And during my first year in the Army, I was recruited to try bobsled. And so after I went through all of my basic training and all of that, I went to go try out for bobsled. And it was just not a good fit because they told me I needed to put on 30 to 50 pounds.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
So for listeners, I'm 5'2.5". I'm 120 pounds soaking wet. So that was not a good fit for me. But then they were like, well, you know, you should switch. You should check out skeleton. So skeleton is like luge, but head first. So if you've ever seen the movie Cool Runnings, it's on an ice track. There's a running start, just like bobsled. You push a weighted sled as fast as you can, and you jump on going head first with your chin inches off of the ice, and you're only wearing a helmet and a skin-tight speed suit.
That's so crazy. So how does one even get recruited for bobsledding? How are you just walking around that girl, she can bobsled?
In the U.S., because we're a little bit behind, we end up recruiting from other sports. So most countries throughout the world start when they're really young. They'll start when they're, 7 years old, 10 years old. Mm-hmm. And in the U.S., we traditionally pull from other college sports. So they're looking for fast, explosive, strong people. So bobsled, these girls are big and strong. So they come from a variety of sports, mm-hmm. but usually volleyball, track and fields, even some swimmers have done it. And for men, it would be football, those types of sports, big, strong, very athletic, mm-hmm. explosive, can run really fast.
Yeah, that's cool though. That's awesome.
Yeah, that's fascinating. So you were okay, you're being a little modest.
That was the goal. So I was an Olympic alternate in 2022. I missed an Olympic team twice. I went to Olympic trials three times. However, if you want me to talk about the situation,
let's go there.
I can get into that. So,
yeah.
All right. So I, the first Olympic team that I was ever trying to make, I came out off of the 2012. So essentially the Olympic season is actually the fall. So it's actually for the 2014 Olympics, for example, it's 2013 is the start of the season, since it's a winter sport. So it's the 2013-2014 season. And then the Olympics is in the February of 2014. And so I had just come off of being the national champion in 2012. And so I was feeling really good. I was doing well, projecting it was a good projection. And so that summer I started to take a birth control, and it happened to be NuvaRing. And I don't recommend making changes like that close to an athletic season starting. So our season usually starts in September, October. I started taking this birth control at the beginning of August. Within 10 days, I started to have difficulty breathing. And
oh my gosh.
It was very subtle. I think the average person would not notice something like that. However, we do a combine mm-hmm. test every year. So if anybody's heard of the NFL combine, it's similar. You get evaluated on your sprints and agility, and you have to lift as much weight as you can. It's very intense. It's a whole day of mm-hmm. being evaluated. And so I went to this combine test, and I was jogging to start warming up and getting ready for this. I could not even jog a lap. I was totally out of breath. And so when I went, I was I can't warm up because I cannot even catch my breath. And I mm-hmm. somehow finished. So part of it is one of the first things we get to do is we sprint, and it's 45 mm-hmm. meters. And if you sprint regularly, 45 meters is not that far. It's not mm-hmm. tough. So I did one sprint and completely collapsed at the end and was just gasping for air. It was so scary. And people were looking at me because at the time I was like a returning athlete. I was a veteran athlete. And there's new people at these tryouts. And they're like, who is this girl? Like, she's supposed to be good, you know? And so it was very embarrassing at the time. And so I felt like, you know, I'm trying to explain myself. I somehow make it through the whole day. I had one of the highest combine scores to this day. Some of the lifts that I made, I've never done since. Like, it was truly remarkable. If you told me I had to do it again, there's no way I could do it under the same conditions. So, I'm like, okay, I leave there. I go to an urgent care. I should have gone to the emergency room, but I went to an urgent care. And I was like, look, I don't know what's going on, but the only thing that's changed in my life is that I was on this birth control. And so they were like, I don't know, let's give you like an inhaler, maybe do you want an epinephrine shot? And I was like, no way. And so my boyfriend at the time, so that was in Utah that I was taking, that I took that combine test. My boyfriend at the time was in Florida. So I get on a plane, flew to Florida. So if anybody knows, flying with blood clots is so dangerous. It's so bad. So I fly to Florida. I see two doctors there. I say the same thing. And I'm calling my mom. I'm like, look, I had one of those like pulse ox things on my finger. I'm like, the percentage is like approaching 90, you know, it keeps dropping. And I'm like, you have to get me into a pulmonologist when I come home. Like I have to see, I no can't get in anywhere scan? Here. And so.
No one would do like a CT scan.
No, and I had said the same thing. So I was like, x-rays.
Not gonna show anything.
But you can't really see on x-rays. So anyway, I take two flights. So I fly Utah to Florida, Florida to Connecticut. In the process, I see five doctors. So I'm telling, and a lot of the doctors are male. So I'm telling these doctors, and I'm like, the only thing I've changed, the only thing is that I started to take this birth control. This is the only difference. I'm like, I can't hold a conversation. I can't even walk upstairs. Like, I'm having such a hard time breathing. I am otherwise a very healthy individual. This has to be the cause. And so I go see this pulmonologist. He was great. He's like, Megan, this is so urgent. I need you to go get an emergency CAT scan at this like after hours place. I go, they, you know, give me a CAT scan and they do an ultrasound on my legs and my pelvis. And so I'm sitting in there after the CAT scan, as they're doing the ultrasound on my legs, and it was dark in the room. I don't know why, but I vividly remember that it being very dark. And they hand me the phone, and it's the pulmonologist. And he was like, Megan, I'm really sorry to tell you that you have blood clots in both lungs. It looks like somebody took paint and they splattered it on the, you know, on the CAT scan. You've got a huge clot off of the main branch of a pulmonary artery. It's caused an infarction, which just means dead tissue for listeners. And, it was horrible. And so they're like, we're sending an ambulance to come get you and send you to the hospital. So that was my experience with blood clots. And that was one of the times that I missed a whole year of competing while recovering. So I missed out on an Olympic team because of that.
Okay. So after that happened, I'm sure they gave you some blood thinners, you stayed in the hospital, they took you off your birth control. Did they do any testing? Did you have any underlying clotting factor disorder?
No, I did all of that. I was in the hospital for 10 days where I was bedridden. I was just sitting around wasting away for 10 days. I did heparin, shots in the stomach, and then I was on Coumadin at the time because this was in 2012. So that was at the time the Coumadin was prescribed a lot. And so then when I was released, I was allowed to walk for 10 minutes a day. And because it was Coumadin and you have to, you know, the dosage is so finicky. I was constantly in and out of doctor's offices trying to get the dosage correct, because you have to check your INR, which is that ratio of like how thick / thin your blood is. And, so I did a ton of tests. Like, I mean, seriously, like dozens of tests for any sort of blood clotting disorder. I had do not have any. So it was insane because it came on so fast. I think because of, you know, I was training very intensely and I noticed very, I mean, it was so subtle in the beginning how it was like just taking me a little bit longer to recover from stuff that I was like, oh, this is weird. But at the time, like there were some fires in Utah at the time. One of my teammates had mono. So, you know, you start to like justify in your mind, like why I could have this thing. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it turned out that I did not have any sort of blood clotting disorder. And so it made it very insane. Like I had never been on any sort of birth control before. It was, I think, good that I like trained at the level that I did. And I mean, everything I did was the same. Like I ate very clean, everything, you know, I went to bed at the same time. It was so regimented. So it was interesting.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. You're so in tune with your body.
Yeah. Yeah. That, and like, why would you choose to do something like that? You know, I was so particular about everything.
Yeah, but you're 22 and I mean, you were 22, and when we think about like, oh shit, I don't want to get pregnant, the first immediate thought that we think about is birth control. And I'm going to guess at that time, IUDs and like the non-hormonal stuff probably wasn't as popular as it is now.
Yeah. And I, at the time, I was like, okay, I travel so much and I'm on different time zones. I don't want to have to take something at the same time every day. And what was even crazier is, so, you know, I go through that experience and my parents were like, well, what are you going to tell people? Cause like, I guess tab was still taboo at the time. And I'm like, I'm going to tell them what happened to me so people know and be like a spokesperson about it. And so I started sharing the story, and one of my classmates from American University had actually passed away from the same thing, from the same birth control. And I didn't know that at the time. I thought like maybe she, like something tragic happened to her, like a car accident, or maybe she had some other chronic illness or something. But it turns out that it was the same, it was the same exact thing. She got blood clots from the same birth control. And so we ended up, like I connected with her family and some other survivors. And essentially what they found out was that NuvaRing had shown that in their trials that they could, they, you know, they claim like, oh, it's a steady release of hormones. But what they found was that it was actually a, like a burst of hormones that like, it was just very erratic. And that's, I mean, it happens to pregnant women. Sometimes they get blood clots because the hormones are all over the place. So, yeah, they found out that it actually was not something that they could control. And regardless, so when people ask me my opinion, I'm I'm pretty biased, but I do not recommend going on birth control for that reason. It was just a wild experience.
Yeah, I mean, most people don't realize what birth control does, in that it actually shuts down all of your natural hormones and gives you surges of synthetic hormones. So there's a huge difference in like hormone replacement therapy, which a lot of times we do with like bioidentical hormones that are similar to our own hormones, versus birth control and synthetic hormone replacement, which is actually made from like cows, or not cows, horse urine, and not natural. But birth control, it completely shuts down your ovaries. It throws you into menopause per se. It shuts down your sex drive. I mean, it gives you those surges of fake synthetic estrogen. And it's actually a lot of times the progestin and some of the birth controls we can even associate with cancer risk. So I don't love birth control. I'll put people on it after I educate them on it, because at the end of the day, it's their choice. But like my husband and I have had conversations with our daughter and we're like, you will get an IUD. Like it's not hormonal. It works great. It lasts for 10 years. It's not messing up your hormones. Like an IUD, go ahead, girlfriend.
Yeah. And I think what, like, another interesting aspect, so just two things that I thought of while you were talking. So one of my friends is in her 30s, has been on birth control since she was 16 years old. She's trying to start a family. And she's like, you would not believe how young all of the girls are that are in these infertility clinics, because they've all been on birth control their whole life. And it's, like, screwed up their hormones. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's crazy. And the other thing is that, for, you know, that's just what we were like taught, you know, you're taught like, oh, okay, well then you just start going on birth control versus like, well, what does my cycle even look like? Like, when am I actually ovulating? You know, like having that knowledge, it's taken away from women in a sense. They don't know. So they feel like they don't have the power to control that those types of things. And you could do that if you were aware.
Like, natural family planning is so easy now. Like, I have an Oura ring.
Yeah.
I can literally pinpoint the day I'm ovulating. You can sync it with a cycle tracking app and you can avoid the days that you're like, I'm on day 13 now. I know that, like, my tubes are tied, so it's not a big deal, but I know not to have intercourse if I didn't want to get pregnant for the next like few days. Like, just don't do it. But We're just not educated on that.
Wow. I know. It's crazy.
It's now becoming more mainstream. But for whatever reason, especially at the time mm-hmm. when I was on that, that was like not really a thing. It was just like the easy fix. And unfortunately, you see that a lot in Western medicine, right? Like, oh, well, just take this pill and make this thing go away. And the power is like not really with the patient.
Yeah, there's not a lot of education given, hardly at all.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was thinking while we were talking to like young girls today, like the generations below us are so lucky in a sense that now all of this stuff is being brought to light. So hopefully they won't have to deal with the same struggles that, you know, women our age and above have gone through, just because the knowledge and the education is being brought more to light these days. So I just think that that's great, especially about their cycles, you know?
Yeah. Okay. So you healed from the blood clot. What happened after that? Where did your life go from there?
So I
obviously you got off birth control.
Yeah, I did get off birth control immediately. It took me a while to recover, just because I was on Coumadin for a while, which that in itself was not very fun. I experienced a lot of like tachycardia and other just not very fun side effects from taking that. And so when I was able to return to sport again, so I left in 2012 as the national champion, and then I came back and I was out, I could barely make the top 10. And so it was very like stressful. So I was like outside of the top 10 in the US, had to work my way back up, didn't make the Olympic team. I wasn't even close for the 2014 Olympics. And so my like realistic goal coming back from that was to try and like continue to make the national team, go back up in ranking. And in the 2014-2015 season, following the Olympic season, I made the world championship team. So it was a good accomplishment because it's basically the Olympic team of the non-Olympic year. And so, yeah, it was just like step by step returning back. And since it was early on in my skeleton career that I missed that whole year, it's tough because people leapfrog you. You can only do skeleton 6 months out of the year. And missing a whole year of competing is very tough in a sport where you only do it 6 months out of the year. So in skeleton, you only get 3 days of practice before a race, and you get 2 training runs per day. So you get 6 training runs total before a race. So it's not a lot of time before you've got to be an expert on a track. So, you know, we incorporate a lot of like sports psychology things in terms of like visualization is huge because you don't do your sport for 6 months out of the year. But at the same time, when you miss a season, it's very tough to make up those runs because like every one of those training runs matters because it's just you're exponentially building that experience compared to someone who's not training or competing. And each run is less than a minute. It's less than a minute that you're on ice. So it's not a lot of time. It's 6 total minutes of training before you race. And so I ended up coming back. I made several world championship teams and I ended up missing out again. I missed another full season leading up to the 2022 Olympics, these past Olympics in China, because of COVID. So because I'm in the army, the Army was super strict about like travel restrictions and everything. So I missed a whole year because I wasn't allowed to travel or compete because of COVID. So it was just a very roller coaster experience, but I learned a lot. I learned a ton about mindset, a ton about listening to my intuition, especially in relation to the blood clots and just how, you know, how I feel good, what fuels me, how to take care of myself and be my own advocate.
I think that it is testament to when you're, we talk about it a lot, when you are in tune with your body, when you're healthy and you know your body, then you're able to figure these things out and know when something is wrong. And your story really is testament to that, because like you said, it was something minor, but because you were so in tune with your body, then you were able to, you know, catch it quickly, which is awesome.
Definitely.
Yeah, but most people are not in tune with their body and they'd been like, oh, I'm short of breath, I have a cold, you know, or something, or they're so unhealthy that they just would have been like, I'm overweight, I can't breathe. And it could have, like, that could have cost you your life. Like, that's how dangerous.
I know. It was so scary, truly. Like, I honestly, because I was, at the time, I was training twice a day sometimes. Like, some of my training sessions were twice a day. And so to be in arguably the best shape that I have ever been in, even until this day, and then being like, I cannot walk up the stairs. I physically couldn't have conversations with people because I was just so out of breath. Like, you know, it sounded like you were talking to like a morbidly obese person because I could not just hold the this conversation I couldn't do. So it was very scary because I'm like, I'm telling these doctors there's something wrong with me. And, you know, had I listened to the first one, like I wouldn't be here to tell this story, most likely. And, but I was just like, I know intuitively, like this is not, something is not right. And I know that I don't, it's not like asthma. I believe it to be the birth control. I believe this to be true. So that was, I mean, it was important for me to stick to that. And like, I ignored my gut the first time by going on birth control, but I was listening to it thereafter. And it was tough because the doctor was like, you know, you may never be an athlete ever again. If, you know, you could have a blood clotting disorder and all of these things. And it was very, I definitely went through a period of depression because I was just like constantly in and out of doctor's offices. I was getting all of these tests done and I wasn't allowed to train just for safety precaution. And, but I just was like holding on to the vision that I could come back. I visualized myself healing. And in my mind, like I believe that that shortened my recovery time.
Sure.
And because I was just like, it was tough. Like it was definitely up and down. There'd be times when I was like, so I had so much doubt. I was so frustrated, very sad. But other times where I had to like talk myself into it and was like, you know what, I can heal faster than what they say. And like, you know, I just was envisioning that. And I preach that to athletes as well, you know, like the power of visualization and like feeling what that feels like to be healthy or to win that race, whatever it is, to make that sale, make that contract, find your relationship. You know, it applies across the board that if you can like hold onto that vision and tap into the feeling as if it's happening now, you'll draw that experience to you quicker than, you know, sitting around being depressed about it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Wow.
So what did you do to, you know, heal? Because you did it naturally, right? So what were some things that you did to heal your body and your hormones?
Well, so I was on the blood thinners. I was on Coumadin, which I hated. It was just not fun. But outside of that, so I mean, to this day, like I will not take anything. Like I barely even take, you know, an aspirin. I just don't take anything. And I'm not saying that everybody has to do that, but that for me, it was just like, I question a lot more now what it is that I'm putting in my body. And so, I mean, once I was finally cleared and was able to get off of the blood thinners, I was ecstatic, but I returned to training normally. I mean, it was a slow progress. I lost a ton of weight because I just wasn't you know, even in the hospital, like being bedridden like that, you lose a lot of weight really quickly.
Yeah.
And so it was a slow transition back for sure. But I learned a lot from the experience, though. I learned a lot about me and who I am. And I think like the message that I hope the listeners get from this is one, yeah, be your own advocate. Be aware of what it is that you're putting in your body, but also that, you know, you do have so much power, and like the obstacles and the challenges that we face are for our greatest good. Like we ultimately learn and grow so much from those experiences, even though they're not fun. Like it was not fun to go through at the time, but I did learn, and I became who I am now because of that experience.
Yeah, I think you said like a few really great things in there, and especially the one about your power. And I don't know, like I work in medicine, but I don't know everything. Like it's not my job to know everything about you, and it is my job, but we don't have time in traditional medicine to do that.
Yeah.
And just because your doctor says you need something doesn't mean that they're God's gift to earth and you can't question them and you can't advocate for yourself, right? So if you find a physician that's not listening to you, like I'm so impressed that you went and found another and then went and found another and then went and found another. Like I talk to so many women and they're like, my doctor won't listen to me. Like I don't feel good. I'm sluggish. I'm tired. They just tell me this is the way it has to be. And that's not it. Like fire your doctor and go find someone who will listen to you because they're out there somewhere.
Yeah. We hear it all the time. Like
wow.
All the time.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because, and I'm not saying that doctors shouldn't be, but you know, that you're put on this pedestal to be like, well, and that could be anybody, like any sort of like authority figure, like, oh, well, they know, so I can't question them. And I think the lesson would be to, yeah, like truly listen to your intuition. And I think in order to strengthen something like that, to like know and be able to listen to like your higher self tell you something, it requires mindfulness. Like I really encourage my athletes and clients to have some sort of a mindfulness practice. And that doesn't mean you have to go and be a monk and live in the Himalayas. Like literally just take like 5 minutes in the morning for yourself. Like 1% of your day is 14 minutes. Can you dedicate 14 minutes of your day that is directed to you? And that could be breath work. That could be yoga. That could be something like sitting in silence where you just have an opportunity. Like we're bombarded all the time with distractions and we're on our phones and people, you got notifications all the time, right? Your attention is taken everywhere else except for you. So if you can cultivate that time for yourself, that will strengthen that voice to be like, what is my intuition telling me is the right thing in this moment?
I love that. Because
the ladies are listening.
We did a podcast earlier today, and that was her advice, was take 5 minutes. Great. You guys both seem to be
that's
exact
funny.
Same.
So ladies, if you're listening, take the 5 minutes. Yeah. Clearly that's important.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
So we always wrap up with one final fun question. So Shauna.
Okay. Megan, if you were going to be one Disney princess, which Disney princess would you be?
Okay. So I just went on a Disney cruise in June.
She's ready.
It was awesome. Like, I highly recommend everybody go on a Disney cruise if you can, because it was like reliving my
whole childhood. I've heard they're nice.
It was unreal. It was honestly, it was so top tier, well done to the nines. So I highly recommend that. I did say that because I'm a redhead now, my natural hair color is dirty blonde. But because I'm a redhead now, I said that I'm Ariel so that I match her. So
yes,
that's who I am.
Love that.
She's not exactly a princess.
I can see it. With your long red hair, I can see it. Just slap on a seashell bra and there you are.
I'm going to Florida next week, so.
There you go. Perfect. Just channel Ariel.
I will.
So can you let everybody know if they want to find you on social media or if you have a website? We'll drop it below, but can you just let everybody know where they can find you?
Yes, definitely. On all social media platforms, I am at The Savage Meglet. Instagram, I'm the most active. You can send me a DM if you have a question. And my website is coming soon. It's thesavagemeglet.com.
Love it.
Love it. That's cute. Well, yeah, this has been awesome. Like I said, we'll link it below, but we hope you ladies enjoyed this episode and we will catch you next time.
Thanks.
See ya.